All right, welcome to the third episode ever of the Bien Quo Show. Recording this on a Tuesday night.
And it's our very first remote Skype recording.
Yeah, so please,
in the same area.
Please forgive us if there are technical difficulties, because this is our first time not recording it live in studio together. We are on remote location, and by remote location, we mean about 20 miles apart.
Exactly, but far enough to not want to brave LA traffic.
Yeah, I really blame Paul for not wanting to drive over to my apartment to do this. This is really your fault.
This isn't, I mean, there's no way for me to want to go to downtown for just a little podcast recording.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, although the parade is over, everyone's gone. With no Laker games going on now, there's going to be no one anywhere.
It's nice and quiet again.
Center. Yeah. Staples Center will be dead until come October, November, when the Lakers start preseason again.
Exactly. Well, how was that? How was the downtown festivities the night of Game 7?
I was actually not around here the night the Lakers won it, thank God, because there were rubber bullets being fired into mobs, people were burning shopping carts and cars, and there was a cab on fire, and I didn't want to be a part of that. I mean, it's
that was
really scary. Yeah, I mean, last year, before I moved into this place, they tore down the Shell station around the corner, and they destroyed this one shoe shop around the corner. And that's just not something that I want to be a part of. You know, that's not something that I want to live in.
Laker fans are very, very classy. That's really just what it boils down to there. Did you get the chance to see the parade at all?
I watched it on tape recording when I got home. Yeah,
almost as good as the real thing there.
Couldn't actually go live, but I did watch the whole thing on the DVR. I will say this about Laker fans, though. Boston fans will always say that Laker fans aren't as passionate about Laker fans, about the Lakers, as the Boston fans are about the Celtics. But I'll put the Lakers drunk fools up against Boston's drunk fools any day.
I think Laker fans are maybe not rowdy in the traditional sense, but I think they're more dangerous.
Yeah, because they're more thugsters. You have more gangsters that are Laker fans. I mean, the Trump fans that are Boston fans, they're just Irish frat boys with fair skin. You know, they don't actually pop people in the ass.
Exactly. You have some dangerous ethnic groups here, and I think
drunk minorities. It's not a good deal.
It's definitely true, and that's what's kind of intimidating about almost all of LA sports, actually, to an outsider like me.
Yeah, kind of scary, those Doyer fans, huh?
Any Doyer fan, any Laker fan, any Raider fan, any Trojan fan, besides the actual people who went to USC, are much more dangerous, and you don't really want to... I mean, it's not your typical trash-talking war. It's there are those ramifications. It's like the Giants fan that killed the Dodgers fan a few years ago down here in L.A.
I thought that was a Dodger fan that stabbed a Giants fan.
There was one that stabbed a Giants fan. There was also a Giants fan that killed the Dodgers fan.
Did he shoot him?
I'm not sure how he killed him, but he killed him. So
that's scary. People taking it. I mean, we're not... Usually that stuff doesn't happen in America. You know, this isn't soccer fan hooliganism.
Exactly.
You know, we're more civilized than the rest of the world is about their sports.
Or we just don't care quite as much.
Yeah.
But I think L.A. is definitely one of the scarier places you could be. And I'm not even saying it's because the fans are, you know, that much. I mean, they're definitely into it. They definitely like their teams a lot. But I think they just have an MO of pushing the envelope a little bit further than those other fan bases do. But I'm glad to see that you made it through okay. I heard Ron Artest had what was he, just saying fuck Boston or something like that?
Ron Artest was saying all sorts of things. He started about 20 chants, none of which caught on, but he did them for about 30 seconds each. Yeah, Boston sucks was one of them.
Okay, Boston sucks.
Yeah,
much more PG there, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think if he started shouting fuck Boston in the middle of the parade, some people would have gotten mad.
That probably wouldn't have gone over too well.
Yeah, not too well.
But actually,
Kobe's kids right there. If Kobe probably would have been the first one to turn around and slap him and say, "My daughters are right here, man."
Kobe would have given him that look when Artest takes a three. And
yeah,
been very similar to that look, I think.
And then Ron would turn over and say, "Thank you, sir. Can I have another?"
Exactly.
Because Ron is completely subservient to whatever Kobe wants.
Well, did you see that interview between Artest after the game?
You mean the post-game interview when he was kind of crazy?
There was the one, with Doris Burke on the court where he, you know, thanks to psychiatrist and, you know, basically just extolled her values and how great of a person she was. And then there was the one after the game for like 10 minutes with the presser when he had his whole family out there and was talking about going to the club and basically just being a drunken idiot, which was really funny, though. It was great.
I have not seen that video yet. I think we were on... Yeah, we were on the way to a bar immediately after the game ended, so didn't really get us a chance to see all the post-game.
I just checked it out tonight, and it's hilarious. I need to take the can.
Okay.
It's seriously, Ron Artest, he's kind of like... The only other person I can really compare in terms of a post-game interview is Mike Tyson, because those two guys literally... I don't think they really make sense. Like, their brains just don't work the same way that most humans' brains works. Like, they just... There's like some really off kilter topic that they just will get on, and I don't think they even hear themselves talking. It's just they're just rambling. And
yeah, people always make the Dennis Rodman to Ron Artest comparison, but Ron Artest is much crazier than Dennis Rodman is, especially in interviews.
Exactly. Dennis Rodman is very, I would say, and I'm not saying he's scripted, but it's all got like a purpose.
Yeah.
Whereas Artest is kind of just out there.
Yeah, and Artest does have better diction than Mike Tyson does. He doesn't say his defense is impregnable.
Exactly.
You know, he doesn't say things like that. He doesn't say he's going to eat anyone's children.
That's true. His voice is also much more normal than Mike Tyson's little girly drawl. But I think you need to check that out, Steve.
I definitely will. And if you are listening, if you're one of the few listeners that we have, you should probably go and check that out as well. But, congratulations to the Lakers for winning their 16th championship, only one behind Boston now on the all-time list.
17-16, and I don't think that this Boston squad's going to be – well, there's still some good players there, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
I'm pretty sure their window is closed.
Everyone just looks old, besides Fox, of course.
I mean, Ray Allen is probably gone, unless he wants to return to a team that's not going to make the finals again.
Yep, that's true.
You know, it all depends on what LeBron does, I guess, this summer. If LeBron goes to a place that Ray Allen can latch on to, he might follow him.
Yeah. Have you heard the latest rumor about... So I don't know how much you know about this guy, World Wide West, but he's basically like a power broker for all of basketball. College, high school, and pro levels. And the latest rumor is that he's trying to convince teams to trade for Chris Paul, and that would help get LeBron to whichever team that Chris Paul lands on. Now, of course, New Orleans would have to want to trade Chris Paul, which would mean that whoever's getting him would have to give up quite a haul.
Yeah, there's an extra wrinkle to this where the owner of the New Orleans Hornets is in deep financial trouble, and so he actually needs to sell the team. And if he can trade Chris Paul, then he would do it because that would save him money.
Yeah, exactly. And they have UCLA's finest, Darren Collison, who's
been
capable behind him, so... it's definitely a thought. I don't think it's actually going to happen, but the thought of Chris Paul and LeBron playing together would be pretty, pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean,
definitely. But any of the teams that have cap space have nothing they can offer New Orleans that would even remotely approach the value that Chris Paul offers. I mean, what would say New York offer him or New
York Z? Wouldn't be able to offer anything. I mean, Chicago could offer a piece that they don't want to give up, like Derrick Rose.
Yeah, but then, what's the whole point? Yeah, the point is that LeBron wants to go to a team that will be ready to compete for a championship right away, and if they have to give up a significant piece in order to get Chris Paul, then that's not going to be the case.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. But in other news, the NBA draft is coming up this week, and that's a big... For those of us that root for teams that never make the playoffs,
who would that be, Paul? I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. Just take a wild guess.
By the way, they changed their. Did you see they changed their logo? The Warriors did this week.
It looks great. I really like it. It's got the nice bridge. I think it's the bridge up there. And I've actually been looking to get some new merchandise, but it's not on sale till the 24th yet. I might have to score a hat or a shirt or something interesting.
But what? Yeah, what position do the Warriors draft at this year?
They are number six this year, which is unfortunate in a draft that has about four good players. So basically, they're looking at big men. This is a big men heavy draft, but all the big men have big questions. So guys like DeMarcus Cousins, who apparently his camp has said that there's no way in hell he's going to Golden State.
Don Nelson.
But yeah,
not good for big men, Don Nelson. Historic.
No, not for rookie big men. That's for sure. They're looking at Greg Monroe, the big man out of Georgetown who can pass and shoot. They're looking at Ekpe Udo, the guy from Baylor who blocks a ton of shots, as well as the Aminu, the Wake Forest guy, and Cole Aldrich from Kansas. Basically, a bunch of big men who are all have questions of sort or another, which will fit in well on a team with Brandon Wright, Anthony Randolph, Andres Biedrinch, all these big men who also are limited in one way or another.
Yeah, whichever one of those guys gets drafted will enjoy coming off the bench for 5 minutes a game as Don Nelson buries him.
Exactly. That's the gist of it. The Warriors also made a trade today. I don't know if you saw. Oh, you did see.
I did see. I reported that news to you, and you were quite happy to get rid of Corey Maggette's contract for Charlie Bell and UCLA's own Dan Gedzerich.
Exactly. Charlie Bell and Dan Gedzerich will do absolutely nothing for the Warriors. But
is it Gedzerich or Gedzerich? Because I heard that he changed it to Gedzerich once he left UCLA.
Oh. Oh, hey, David's here, ready to play FIFA, I see.
Are we being interrupted, Paul?
I might have to leave the couch. This is very difficult. Dan Gedzerich or Gedzerich? I'm not really sure. I used to hear Gedzerich, but I think...
Yeah, at UCLA, it definitely was Gedzerich. I think he might have gone and tried to do a little nene, you know, one of those Brazilian things. You get a little name change in there.
I don't even know what ethnicity he is, but
I have no idea.
It's pretty goofy looking.
Yeah.
Getting rid of 3 years and $31 million of Corey Maggette is a pretty big accomplishment. And the funniest thing that I've read recently was that the Warriors' three best, most recent trades have been all salary dumps: getting rid of Steven Jackson, getting rid of Corey Maggette, and getting rid of Jamal Crawford.
Yeah.
So basically, it's a pretty sad state when your team's best moves are when you're getting rid of talented, overpaid, selfish players. But that's what the Warriors have done.
In their defense, though, they weren't going to win with any of those guys. So it was probably a good idea to get rid of their salaries.
It was. But it was also
they don't replenish them.
Poor idea to take them on in the first place. But yeah. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, Steph Curry is fun. He's a lot of, he's really entertaining to watch. And unfortunately, outside of Steph Curry and Anthony Randolph, when Nelson decides to play him, there is not a whole lot going on for Golden State. So we need this new logo. It's going to usher in a new era for the Warriors. And, I like the logo. I don't know about the rest of the team, but the other
at least you'll look good losing.
Exactly. The other funny move is that, so I know you complain a lot about, you know, Frank McCourt and the Dodgers.
I do.
Spending money. Well, Chris Cohan, what he did was he took the 34th pick in the draft and traded it down to Portland for the 44th. And all he got for it was like $2 million that goes into his pocket, I assume, because it's not going to any other players. And then they traded that pick in the Maggette trade. So they basically, you know, not only did they try to dump $31 million, but they tried to put $2 million in their own pocket, and they got literally nothing for it, including their second rounder now.
That reminds me a lot of the Marcus Camby trade that the Clippers pulled off this year, where they traded him for Steve Blake and Travis Outlaw, and it served no purpose because all of the contracts in the deal were expiring at the end of the year. And it only saved Donald Sterling about $500,000 or some insignificant amount like that. Those are the cheapness of some of these multi-millionaire owners who make tons of money. I mean, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
It's utterly ridiculous. I mean, he's moving down 10 spots to save like a million or two, and then he's going to end up trading the pick, and like, now there's not even a second rounder. And this, the one good thing about this draft is that there actually is depth in the sense that you can take a chance on a guy in the second round this year and probably, especially from the first five picks, do pretty well with it. But hey, that's out the window now. So hopefully the Warriors score a lucky guy and maybe pick up an Omar Samhan or a Jeremy Lin and get lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they'll hit the jackpot. Who knows?
Exactly. Good old basketball. So the season really starts for people like me, Thursday.
Right. Then the hope is renewed, and then it all goes down the drain come November.
Well, once the season actually starts, it's the same old story all over again. Let's see. What else do we have on the list, Steve?
Let's move on to baseball, because I want to talk about this, because the Dodgers just got their asses handed to them by the Red Sox this weekend. They got swept in a three-game series in Fenway in Manny's first games back in Boston, in which he did not get a warm reception. But, you know, that's besides the point. That's pretty much expected. We knew the Boston fans weren't going to cheer Manny. What I want to talk about is how dominant the AL has looked against the NL in general, and especially since the Giants have the Red Sox this coming weekend and the Dodgers have the Yankees at home. Can we expect our teams to win at all this weekend?
Well, it's going to be tough. I think at home that both clubs have a chance to pull a series victory. It's absurd that the top three records in baseball all reside in the AL East. I mean, that's just absurd. And, I don't really feel like the NL West is a bad division. I mean, I think that there are definitely worse divisions. And certainly it's competitive with the Padres, Giants, Rockies, and Dodgers. But it seems like the AL East, the AL in general, and the AL East specifically, is just on a whole nother level.
Yeah, the quality is incomparable. And it's so sad to say, because the reality is the NL is quadruple A at this point. There was a day this past week where the AL swept all of the interleague games in that single day. And I don't think that's ever happened before. But it was very alarming when that happened, because it just shows
it's like
how
14 games, yeah.
it's a joke. I mean, what is going on here? The discrepancies in the league should not be this stark.
Yes. Well, and not only that, but I mean, if you look at Boston right now, if you look at the Yankees right now, I mean, their lineups, while they're definitely good and better than the Giants lineups, for example, probably on par with the Dodgers, but I mean, they're trotting out guys that, you know, they weren't expecting to see. You know, like the Red Sox are starting Daniel Nava in left.
Yeah.
They play, they're trotting out, you know, McDonald in center and Billy Hall out there sometimes and Josh Reddick. I mean, it's not like this is the vaunted Ellsbury in center and
Daniel Nava, a 27-year-old journeyman, I mean, just called up to the majors this year for the first time. Am I right?
Yes, you're actually we have a little. I have a little story about this, which I haven't told you. One of our middle school buddies used to be a part of the Chico Outlaws, the independent league, and apparently a few years ago he was kind of. I mean, Nava was up there in Chico, and Nava played really well, led the league in hitting. He was almost like a triple crown winner or something like that. And you know, our buddy told our buddy Nick that to keep an eye out on Nava, and they signed him for $1 and hits a grand slam in the first pitch he sees.
Yeah, first pitch ever.
That's just unbelievable.
They showed the graphic after that. The only other player in Major League history to hit a grand slam on his first ever pitch scene, Kevin Kuzmanoff. He hasn't turned out too well. So let's wait. Yeah, let's wait on the Daniel Nava hype here.
Exactly. Well, do you think the Dodgers have a chance to take this series in the Yankees this weekend?
No. That's a simple answer. The Dodgers are screwed this weekend. I mean, the Yankees, I mean, we're going to avoid Phil Hughes, and I never thought that I would be excited that we're avoiding Phil Hughes, but I actually am, because Phil Hughes this year has been pretty damn good.
He's been nasty. He's been probably their best pitcher. Maybe CeCe, but, you know, those two.
Yeah, but I have no hope for this series. I have a ticket actually for Sunday's game. I'm gonna go.
Oh, okay.
I'm not looking forward to it, because I know we're just gonna get slaughtered.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have a ticket. So like you, I have a ticket to the Sunday's Giants game against the Red Sox, and I'm not sure how this starts line up. I know Lindskum's going for the Giants, and...
Well, see, the magic of being on our own computers in our own apartments is that we can Google machine this up right now.
Okay, so let's pretend to keep talking while we figure out who's actually pitching.
By the way, the Dodgers, again, as we speak right now, as we're recording this, losing 6-3 in the eighth inning to the Angels.
They were up 3-0, weren't they?
Were they? I don't know. I haven't been...
They were up 3-0, and Kershaw was pitching, and they were up 3-0, and they've managed to soil that one a little bit.
Oh, jeez.
Let's see. For Boston, we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be a Lester versus Lincecum showdown on Sunday, which should be pretty exciting. I'm even more excited now the fact that I realize that Lester's going. I'll let you look up who's going for the Dodgers. But what I was going to say is that I've been reading articles on the Dodgers lately about the defense in the outfield. And we know it never used to be very good, especially with Manny in left and, you know, Ethier is okay in right. But this year, Ethier has really fallen off. And not only that, Matt Kemp, from all the advanced defensive statistics like Uzer and plus minus and all that, apparently is the worst center fielder in all of baseball. And Ethier and Kemp actually are the two worst defenders so far based on these statistical models, which, of course, there's a lot of variation in such small sample sizes. Mm-hmm. But,
no, yeah, I've seen that. I've seen those studies, too, yeah. And it's not even close. You know, Matt Kemp is worse. Matt Kemp is the worst center fielder in baseball this year, and it's not even close. He is by far the worst.
Which is really... It's really surprising to me because I always thought he was a good defender. I mean,
well, he was last year.
He passes the eye test. You know, he's fast. Not that strength means a whole lot in the outfield, but he covers a lot of ground with that speed. Rihanna's really getting to him.
Yeah, by every conceivable measure, last year he deserved that gold glove. But this year, I don't know what's happened to him. He's fallen off. You know, Ned Colletti ripped him earlier in the year for being nonchalant in center field, and Colletti was postulating that it was because he got a new deal and he finally got paid. But he didn't bring up the Rihanna card.
That's always a great thing.
You know, I was glad he didn't bring up the Rihanna card, because that, I feel like, is almost more offensive if you're a ball player, and to think that, you know, your girlfriend is getting in the way of your performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Dodgers... You know, certainly the lineup offensively is still there, but it looks like the defense might have some work to do.
Yeah, and especially since left field is just a black hole with Manny there. You know, you're not getting anything out of that. So Matt Kemp's really got to pick it up. You know, with Manny there, he has to be basically the best center fielder in the league in order to cover all that ground. Otherwise, it's not looking good.
This sounds vaguely like a former left fielder that I was familiar with.
Another juiced guy, except from the left side.
I seem to remember the commercial where the Giants had their marketing campaign was basically Barry sitting in left, saving energy. And this is during the California energy crisis. And he was sitting on a recliner while I think Jose Cruz Jr. in right and Marquise Grissom in center were covering all the ground, and Barry was like, I'm saving energy.
Yeah, sure you are.
How far we've come since those days. Now we have Mr. Andres Torres running out for everything out there.
Yeah, it's not looking good for the Dodgers or the Giants. You know, just even if they get to the World Series and they have to play some AL team, they're just going to get swept out of the playoffs. You know, it's not inspiring very much hope in me right now.
No, the whole NL in general is really depressing. And it's, I mean, the thing is, though, if you're an AL East fan, and if you, pick one of the three teams, you know, the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees. I mean, these three are definitely, without a doubt, the three best teams in baseball.
Right.
And one of them is not going to make the playoffs, which is just absurd. And the Red Sox have done so well to come back from this, you know, they had a brutal start to the season, and everyone was questioning their moves, and surprisingly, the offense has been carrying them along, but you know, that's just it's tough to be a fan, and they could conceivably win like 95 games and not even make the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, that's
then the realignment Hawks get on their Bug Selig's case and try and get him to realign the divisions so that all the best teams can make it in. How do you feel about that, Paul? Because my stance is that they should realign the divisions only to fix the AL West NL Central discrepancy of their six teams in one and four teams in another. That, to me, is completely unfair. Why some teams only have to compete with three to make the playoffs and others have to compete with five. It just doesn't make any sense. So other than that, you know, I don't think any realignment is necessary, but they should fix that loophole, I think.
I agree. The only rationale I can think of is that the Astros and the Pirates are just that bad that it's okay to have six teams in that division. But other than that, you know, it doesn't really make any sense. And, you know, if you're going to put Texas in the AL West, I mean, Houston's in the same state. You could easily put them in the AL West too.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think they should just return the Brewers to the AL West. I mean, because the Brewers were in the American League as early as the, you know, as late as the 90s. So, you know, having them go back, I don't think that would be a problem.
That wouldn't be a problem with me at all. And I think, you know, the way they mash with, you know, Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder, maybe that'd make room for my boy Matt Gamble. And they don't really pitch, so yeah, they'd be a great American League team.
Yeah. Okay. We should be the commissioners. This is so simple. We figured it out in 10 seconds.
We could put in replay. I mean, that
that'd be in the next thing. Put in replay. speaking of the AL East, did you hear about Lady Gaga's whole deal at Yankee Stadium this weekend?
I did. So first of all, I don't know about you, Steve. I'm not a huge Lady Gaga fan
In case you haven't heard, Lady Gaga showed up at Yankee Stadium wearing a black bikini, basically, or a black bra with a half-buttoned-up Yankee jersey exposing the bra, and fishnet stockings with a bikini bottom. That's all she wore. And she was flicking off the fans, and she tried to get into the clubhouse after they lost to the Mets, and the clubhouse attendants wouldn't let her in. And because of this, everyone thought she was banned from Yankee Stadium, even though the Yankees have now come out and said that she is not banned.
I think she got in.
Did she get in?
I think she got in, yeah. She was there, and apparently she was, like, really drunk and slurring and swearing and cussing and trying to get everyone's attention, and no one really was giving it to her, even though she was like half dressed and slurring and swearing and drunk. But yeah, and then, you know, the Yankees basically said, well, there were rumors that they had banned her. They said, no, she just can't go after a loss. And then Jerry Seinfeld today said that Lady Gaga's a joke.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld ripped her.
He got into it, and he said if you take away the A from Gaga, you just get gag, and which, you know.
Well, then she'd be perfect for A-Rod, then.
exactly.
Can you imagine her in that clubhouse, too? A-Rod would be all over her. A-Rod bangs anything that moves.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely A-Rod would. Although she's, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Gaga fan, and I understand people who are, but
I mean, I recognize she's very talented. I mean, her songs are very catchy.
Yeah, she's catchy.
I think she kind of overdoes her act a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like a little much. You know, I mean, it's just not my style, I guess is what I'd say. But the funny thing is, so I was reading on Wikipedia one day, and somehow I ended up on Lady Gaga, and I realized.
Hey, what was the Wikipedia page that you were at the other day? Was it Martha Stewart or some really emasculating Wikipedia page? These Wikipedia pages that are embarrassing.
Hey, Steve, if you've ever been on Wikipedia, you don't really know where you're going to end up. You could end up anywhere. You just open like eight tabs and you're like on six different topics while you're still reading the first one. But yeah, Lady Gaga, apparently, so she's from New York originally, and she actually went to my mom's high school in Manhattan, which is interesting in the sense that it's the Convent of the Sacred Heart, which is an all-girls Catholic school where they're all taught by nuns and raised very religiously and Catholic. And that's where Lady Gaga started. And obviously something didn't work out because here she is now, right?
Yeah. Oh, man.
So She's come a long way, I think, is the moral of that story. But I mean, it's funny because, you know, baseball doesn't really get a whole lot of love in terms of like celebrities and stuff.
Right. Derek Jeter is really the only guy who gets the hottest actresses. You know, it's not like basketball or football or those other sports where celebrity girlfriends are a regular attraction.
Right. And you know, when you see celebrities at baseball games, you're seeing like Stephen King at a Red Sox game, you know.
Right, right.
Like, you're not seeing like, oh, well, look, there's Kim Kardashian in the stands at a football game, right?
Right. It's not a place to be seen. It's not a hip spot to hang out at a baseball game.
Not at all. Which is why, for all of the trouble that Lady Gaga has caused, it's kind of, I don't know, it's entertaining and refreshing.
It's like, fun that she was there.
It's pretty funny that she actually is there and kind of gives a damn, apparently, yeah. Which she actually does. It's definitely different.
Yes. The Dodgers have Alyssa Milano at each game. She's a hardcore fan. She's a season ticket holder. She knows her stuff. She's a true Doyer fan. But not the same antics that Lady Gaga brings to a Dodger game.
I you know what, I appreciate that. Alyssa Milano is great, and I think that if she did do what Gaga did, then that would really just be too much.
Yeah, I mean, Alyssa Milano, by the way, dating pitchers left and right before she married and settled down.
Oh, absolutely.
Have we talked about this on the podcast or just offline? Because I know we've talked about this before.
We've only talked about this separately, but I mean, you want to run through the list, Steve? We've got
Brad Penny, Carl Pavano, Barry Zito. You know, that's three good to mediocre pitchers right there. She just has a thing for pitchers.
She does. So did she date Barry Zito when he was... It must have been in Oakland, right?
I think it was when he was still good.
Okay. And then he subsequently got paid. She left, and now he's terrible.
You know what? Alyssa Milano was the good luck charm because she dated Carl Pavano back when he was good. And then when Brad Penny, when he was on the Dodgers, when he was good. And, you know...
So they were good when she was with them, but then afterwards they all fell.
Yes, apart. Yes. When Alyssa Milano leaves you, that's when your career goes in the toilet. That's the rule.
Okay. Although all three of those guys have gotten paid pretty well.
Yeah, that's true. And Brad Penny in the ladies department has done quite well afterwards.
Well,
he ended up with Dushku for a while.
Oh, right. Yeah, Dushku. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Dushku, yep. And then just not too far back, he was spotted with Dancing with the Stars' Karina Smirnoff, the hot dancer on Dancing with the Stars. So Brad Penny is doing fine for himself, which I don't really understand considering he's like a big, fat, ugly dude. But all the power to him.
That's true. Well, sticking along this topic, I'm gonna make a stretch of a tangent here. But you mentioned Derek Jeter, and we've never even really touched on all the girls that Derek Jeter's been with, but it is a doozy of a list. We've got, let me see what I can remember off the top of my head. We have Jessica Alba.
Right.
We have Jessica Biel. We have, Mariah Carey. We have, Vida Guerra. We have, Minka Kelly.
Right.
Who I am going to segue with in a second.
Current lady. Vanessa Minnillo? Did he get Vanessa Minnillo?
Yes, her as well. I thought I read Gabrielle Union.
So yeah, I did Scarlett. Read that too, yeah. Scarlett and Gabrielle Union, I have heard that.
Which is like ridiculous.
That's already a murderer's row. That's the 27 Yankees of hot chicks right there. So,
that's like... if you pick like any two or at most three out of that list, that would already be amazing. But then somehow he's got like 10 of them.
And, you know, to settle down, the rumors are that, you know, he's engaged to Minka Kelly now, right?
Right, right.
And, to have to settle down with Minka Kelly, you know, one of the most beautiful women on earth. You know, Derek Jeter is just the luckiest asshole on the face of the earth maybe he's ever lived. I mean, he's the most beloved Yankees of all time. He gets tons of chicks. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I mean, what more can you ask for?
I mean, I rag on Derek Jeter all the time because I don't feel like he deserves all the attention he gets. But in this category, I mean, you just tip your cap and, you know, there's not much you can say.
Yeah, he's also respected by all his peers, you know.
Absolutely. No one dislikes Derek Jeter.
No one has anything bad to say about Derek Jeter except for irrational Red Sox fans.
and me. But yeah, my great segue there was that Minka Kelly is in Friday Night Lights.
Ah, I saw that coming, Paul. Good job.
Yes, thank you.
See, we're getting better. We're getting better
than our old transitions, which were like, okay, so we're talking about the NL West. And let's talk about Sellers of Catan now.
Yeah.
anyway, yeah, so Minka Kelly is on Friday Night Lights, which has been force-fed down my mouth by Steve. But I have to say, I watched the first episode, I watched the pilot, the first season, and I really liked it.
It's a good show, isn't it? I mean, the first episode, I mean, strong, but it definitely gets better.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the first episode was, the only thing I didn't like about it was it was very predictable. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like watching Varsity Blues, but with, like, explosions in the sky as the band, as opposed to, like, you know, some crazy Texas band.
Right.
And so instead of, but it's also like Friday Night Lights, the movie, and it gives you that kind of more serious tone to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I don't like about it is that how severely it plays on kind of like the stereotypes of like Texas athletes, or I guess football players. I mean, you have your pretty boy quarterback who's like the stud. You got your backup quarterback who's like a bit of an awkward nerd type.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is basically straight out of Varsity Blues and Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
You got the badass fullback, badass white boy fullback Riggins, who just like wants to blow people up and is just like crazy. And then you got the showboating like black running back who like is all about himself and, you know, is, I wouldn't say selfish, but, you know, very self-centered, obviously.
Right. And after the first episode, it does seem like they're the typical high school football player cliches that we've seen in every movie. But let me just say that at the end of this first season, these characters will have been so well-defined and given their own backstories that you completely will reject that stereotyping.
Okay.
Because you will see, Paul. Just wait it out.
I'll give it time. I figured that it must have gotten, I mean, it was already good, but I felt like it must have gotten a lot better to, you know, kind of break through the traditional stereotypes.
Right, right.
So, but, you know, I definitely liked what I saw. I mean, I love football, and I can do some of that, you know, soap opera drama stuff, so.
Yeah, to this day, I still maintain that season one of Friday Night Lights is the single greatest season of television that I have ever seen. And that,
exactly.
Maybe that's because I haven't watched The Wire yet, which I'm going to get to soon, probably starting next week. But
good.
Friday Night Lights season one is great.
Yeah, no, and that's what really, you know, I didn't want to overhype it for myself, but I you know, you've told me that like three times now.
Yeah. Minka Kelly, by the way, probably the weak point of the show in the beginning.
Yeah, but she's great on the eyes.
Yeah, she's very easy on the eyes. Not the best actress in the beginning, although in later seasons she does get much better, and she gets very good, and Lila Garrity character gets more well-formed, and Minka Kelly does a great job. But in the first season, a little error-headed, you know, goody-two-shoes cheerleader, you know, very stereotypical, not a lot of depth to the character. But maybe that's part of the writer's fault and not Minka Kelly.
Sure. I mean, it's the first season. There's issues to iron out. You know, I'm glad that I felt a little weird kind of being attracted to a high school cheerleader, but then I realized she's 29.
Oh, yeah. She's nowhere near high school age.
It's fine.
The only one I think that's actually close to high school age is Amy Teagarden, the coach's daughter, Julie Taylor.
Okay. She kind of looked like Alicia Cuthbert in...
A little bit, yeah. Like
the start with, like, the bangs and stuff.
Uh-huh. I think she's really cute, too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
She had, like, short stints on 90210, I think, and some other stuff, but...
Okay.
But, yeah, she's really good. She'll get more of a role as the series progresses. Also, Tim Riggins, you'll see. You'll fall in love with Tim Riggins. Tim Riggins becomes one of the greatest characters in drama in the last 5-10 years or so.
Wow.
He's great.
Okay.
just wait until Tim Riggins has his coming out party.
I can see it. I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of, you know, he's got that kind of potential.
Yeah.
Is what I'd say. But yeah, I'll probably watch an episode after this podcast tonight. So I'll have more to report on for you tomorrow.
All right. Looking forward to it.
But yeah, you got to get on the wire. You.
I will. I will. Next week. Next week on this podcast, hopefully we'll be able to talk about what I've watched on the wire so far and how much further Paul's gotten on Friday Night Lights.
And so, you'll probably be telling me on the wire that it's a little bit unintelligible, that it's really long, that you're not really sure what you think about it yet. So, okay, which is okay. It takes, in my opinion, like 5 or 6 episodes to get into every season of The Wire, which might seem really dumb to you when it's only like 12 episodes in a season. But I guarantee you that like those last 6 episodes will just blow your mind and make it all worth it.
Well, I can't wait.
Not to overhype anything now, but
yeah, not that we've overhyped these shows at all, right?
exactly. So did you have a chance to see Toy Story 3 yet?
No, I have not. Have you?
I have not either, but I've heard from multiple people that it was pretty good.
Well, yeah, it got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is absurdly high.
That's really high. That's extraordinarily high. I did watch the kind of like the making of Pixar last night on CNBC, which is obviously...
I heard about that. I was meaning to DVR that, but I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I actually took... here's a class if you are going to UCLA, which you aren't because you are our friends and you're older. But basically, there's a class at UCLA called History of Film and Animation, and I took it my 4th year, last quarter. And they go through a lot of the, you know, traditional Disney stuff, but they also hit upon Pixar. And it's really interesting because, I mean, Pixar has essentially produced just fantastic movies with the exception of maybe A Bug's Life.
Right. Even The Bug's Life, though, made tons of money.
Right, it made tons of money, and it just wasn't as critically, you know, well-received.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But every single movie, and what's crazy is that they've basically changed directors for a lot of them. So, you know, you get Toy Story, you get Toy Story 2 and 3. You also get Incredibles, which, if you think about it, feels really different. And then, you know, Finding Nemo and Up, and there's just so many great movies they've made, and I think they just do a fantastic job of... you know, developing those characters and really give it a good kind of human feel to it.
Yeah.
And
you just look at the movies they've made. Toy Story. I'm looking at the... I brought up the list on Wikipedia right now. This is every single movie that Pixar has done, and they're gross. Toy Story, $361 million. Bug's Life, $363 million. Toy Story 2, $485 million. Monsters, Inc., $525 million, Finding Nemo, $867 million, The Incredibles, $631 million, Cars, $461 million, Ratatouille, $623 million, Wall-E, $521 million, Up, $731 million, and Toy Story 3, after 1 weekend so far, up to $170 million already. So just dominant in every single movie that they release. They clean up. And there's really not a bad movie among those.
There really isn't. And a lot of those movies... what's great about it is that they can take a story or a topic or a genre that you would never think to make a movie about, like a bunch of rats cooking or just a giant, you know, a bunch of balloons lifting a house into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way they can make that, you know, really, really watchable. It's kind of like the only parallel I can draw to it in terms of like, you know, breaching genres is like what Will Ferrell tried to do in like the mid 2000s with like random ass movies like Blades of Glory and, you know, Talladega Nights, where he's just taking literally ludicrous ideas and running with them.
Yeah. And then he just, those are all the same though, you know, he just puts his Will Ferrell shtick on it and makes tons of money.
Right.
And I think those don't always produce good movies, by the way.
No, they don't. They don't. So I'm stoked to see Toy Story 3. I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and fit that in there one of these days.
Well, you know, I haven't watched a movie still since Kick-Ass. So.
You need to get out to the movie theater some more, Paul.
I guess I do. I really do.
Okay, well, segueing a little bit, let's talk about the World Cup.
Let's do that.
As we stated last week on the podcast, neither of us is too high on the whole World Cup deal. But the U.S. is playing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They have Algeria. And if they win, they go to the knockout round.
Mm-hmm.
And if they tie, then there's a whole bunch of scenarios where they could either move forward or get knocked out. If they lose, they're done, basically.
Yep.
So This is a must-win, basically, for the U.S. in order to guarantee their spot. So what are your thoughts, Paul? Do you think they can do it?
I think they can do it. You know, they've started off really slowly against both England and Slovenia to the extent that you're like, how could they blow this against Slovenia? But
they were robbed, though, fairly in that game.
They did get robbed. They did get robbed. But at the same time, you know, coming back from a 2-0 deficit in soccer, which I am admittedly kind of a newbie at, but that's a big deal. And they really played with a lot of heart, a lot of energy, and a lot of passion in that second half. I think as long as they come out ready to go tomorrow and don't make any stupid mistakes, they should beat Algeria and advance on to the round of 16.
Yes, Algeria also much worse than Slovenia or England. So
exactly.
I think they should not, on paper, pose a problem to the U.S. Although, in soccer, the margin for error is so much smaller because one mistake can ruin you so drastically that, you know, anything can really happen in any soccer match.
Absolutely.
So
that's what's really...
It's not really a guaranteed win. You know, in the NBA, the best team usually wins. You know, but it seems the lower score, I mean, the lower the scores are in any sport, you know, the less the best team has a chance of coming out on top. You know, and you see that because the NBA is the highest scoring sport, and the best teams win, you know, the majority of the time. The NFL and Major League Baseball are lower scoring games, and so they have a little more parity than pro basketball does. And soccer has the most parity because any one little thing that happens can ruin you.
Exactly. And I think especially, you know, when you're talking about those other sports, you're often talking about series or best of seven, right? And,
right.
You know, that generally over time, the better team will win. But if you put just one game out there, you never know what could happen. You know, if Algeria comes and scores, you know, in the 20th minute, they can, you know, load the box and basically play not to lose the rest of the way, and it'll become that much more difficult for the U.S. to push across that one goal.
Yeah.
You know, this is the time, though, for the U.S. I mean, this is the chance to really push the program forward. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people like me that are kind of jumping on the bandwagon, mostly because I don't find soccer terribly interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But if I'm pulling for the U.S., it's really exciting. And I think it's also too bad that we got robbed last week.
Yeah, that's really – if we end up not advancing to the knockout round, that's what everyone's going to point to looking back at this World Cup as the moment that robbed the U.S. of possible glory. But let's be honest. I mean, even if we go to the knockout round, we're not going very far. I think our first match would be against, like, Germany – and they'd probably rip us apart.
Yeah, probably.
So, I mean, let's keep our expectations grounded here.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't think we're going too far. But at the same time, it would be a little bit of a disappointment if we didn't continue to improve. And this is the next logical step, I guess, that U.S. soccer would need to take to really become good.
Yeah.
Which always, you know, it's tough to... I think that's why Americans don't gravitate towards soccer as well, is just because there never really has been a real reason to get excited about it.
Yeah, we've never had a true star, that's true.
There's no star, exactly. And even now, like, Landon Donovan is obviously the best player, the best American player there's been. But, you know, he doesn't have the captivating persona that, you know...
Yeah, he's not as charismatic.
Exactly. Which is fine, I'm not saying he has to be. But... It's tough to gravitate towards a team that, you know, is very understated. You know, everyone around the world has these conceptions of, like, the great player. You know, there's, like, the Ronaldo, the Messi, the Rooney. But the U.S., I mean, while Donovan is obviously the leader, he's not nearly at that level where he commands international respect. I mean, he's respected within the soccer community, but not to the common fan.
Right.
So it'll be tough.
Yeah. Well,
are you planning to watch tomorrow morning before work?
Well, I'll probably watch at work.
Is it you're able to watch at work?
Well, they have a TV in the cafeteria, so I might sneak down there for a little bit and check in and see what's happening.
That's a good move.
We'll probably be the only person there.
No, probably not. It's funny. I actually realized my ethnic coworkers, my Mexican and Korean coworkers, who are not very well versed in the traditional American sports like baseball, basketball, and football are big soccer fans, go figure.
Oh, who would have thought?
Yeah, they show zero interest whatsoever in, you know, the common sports, but when it comes to the World Cup, not only do they have an idea of what's going, or, you know, who's doing well and all that, but, you know, strategy and, you know, kind of the country's outlook and how the fans are treating everyone and expectations. It's like, holy cow, you know.
Yeah.
I'm talking to these two.
Speaking of the Korean fans, do you hear what happened about North Korea's team after they lost to Portugal?
I didn't hear.
They lost 7-0 to Portugal today. And
oh, yeah.
North Korea just happened to pick this game to broadcast live to all of its citizens. So how do you think that the North Koreans felt about that? Well, not too well. The state-run TV, as soon as the game was over, said, oh, we lost to Portugal, we didn't play. Now we will bring you some other coverage. And they cut directly to workers and engineers praising Kim Jong-il.
Are you serious?
And you can go look that up. There's an AP Wire news story about that, about how immediately following the game, they transitioned away to footage of engineers and other workers in North Korea praising Kim Jong-il.
That is unbelievable.
You know, the real problem is, you know, Kim Jong-il didn't suit up for North Korea with his athletic prowess, you know,
that's
being able
true.
To shoot 11 holes in one in his first round.
He would have definitely been a game changer for them.
Yeah,
you know?
Kim Jong-il, you know, he's got some speed. He's got the foot to, you know, kick the ball on set pieces. So, you
he's
know.
Certainly a threat in a different... wow, okay, I didn't... You know, that country's got a lot going on, and I don't think any of it is very good.
Yeah, yeah. not very good to be a North Korean.
Not good at all.
All right, we're coming up on an hour here, Paul.
We have two more... one more topic we should touch on briefly, and then, you know, our closing... We're going to have a new weekly segment at the end of every episode, which we'll close with. But before we get there, not to cut you off, Steve, but I wanted to touch upon UCLA baseball really quickly.
Ah, how could I forget? The Bruins.
Yes. The Bruins have won their first two games of the College World Series. They will take on the winner of TCU and Florida State for the opportunity to move to the championship best of three series with the other side of the bracket. Your thoughts, Steve?
My thoughts are the UCLA team is virtually certain to advance to the championship series, considering it's a double elimination tournament and the Bruins have yet to lose. So the winner of the TCU Florida State game would have to beat the Bruins twice in a row in order to eliminate them, and I don't see that happening, especially when we have Rob Rasmussen going and then Trevor Bauer likely going in the game after that. So Bruin fans, sit tight. I think we're looking pretty good.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I think this is, you know, this is the type of team that in baseball is extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, and this goes for the big leagues too, is that you get, you know, two stud starters and a third extremely good starter who's a second round draft pick, and, you know, in a best of three series, look out, right? I mean, there's
yeah,
no
they're,
way
they're kind of like the Giants of
exactly.
college baseball, where they have great starting pitching, not a lot of hitting, but enough, you know, better hitting than the Giants do.
Probably much better hitting.
But enough to get the job done.
Exactly, and I think it's also a testament to the Bruins' resilience that they could lose their number three hitter, Tyler Ramatula, and still, you know, manage to pound out 11 runs against Florida and 6 against TCU. I mean, I think that's pretty impressive. You know, they don't beat you with the long ball, a lot of nickel and dime types of singles and doubles, walks, steals, you know, moving the runner over. But at the same time, that might make the offense a little bit more consistent, and it helps kind of lessen the blow of your number three man. So,
yeah. So, I'm going to be looking forward to that championship series.
Let's do it. Go Bruins.
Go Bruins.
Okay.
All right. Now we're going to introduce a new feature that we will begin closing out the podcast with every week, in where me and Paul present each other with a Mary Boff kill of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And this week's Mary Boff kill, would you like to go first, Paul, and present your Mary Boff kill of the week?
Yeah,
oh, by the way, Mary Bob Kill, let's explain the rules. If you haven't ever heard this game before, you are given three names of three people, and you have to decide to marry one of them, fuck one of them, and kill one of them. So, Paul, if you will, present the first Mary Bob Kill of the week ever on the BN Pro Show.
Sure. So my question to you, Steve, is, which one do you want to answer?
we'll both answer both of them. I would like to hear our both of our answers on both of these.
Okay, so first we'll go with the three Jessicas: Jessica Alba, Jessica Biel, and Jessica Simpson.
So this is the classic Mary Bob Kill, because you have three gorgeous women who all share the same first name. So, you know, it kind of lines up perfectly for this game.
Exactly. I don't think in the future, it's probably only going to get worse. Yeah. It's only going to go downhill.
We started out with the best right here.
Exactly.
But Jessica Alba, Biel, or Simpson, I would have to say, you know, I've given this quite a bit of thought. I think I'd have to marry Jessica Alba, fuck Jessica Simpson, and kill Jessica Biel.
Really?
Yes. And the reason for that, I mean, Jessica Biel, while insanely hot, you know, doesn't do it for me as much as the other two. Jessica Simpson is sexual napalm, as described by John Mayer. So you really have, you know, you've got to fuck her. And then Jessica Alba, I don't know what it is about her, but maybe it's because she's a mom now. But she seems much more wifely than she did before. And so I think I'd have to marry her.
Okay. Yeah. That's an interesting answer, Steve. I don't think I have the same as you on any of them.
Actually. Really? All right, let's hear it. Paul. I'm excited to hear this.
I'm going to marry Jessica Biel.
Okay.
I'm going to do Jessica Alba, and Jessica Simpson is hitting the road.
Oh, really? You're throwing away sexual napalm?
Yeah, I don't know.
She's not sexual napalm?
She's just so dumb. I mean, there's just like this very minimum threshold where it's just like I wouldn't be able to deal with that, and maybe that minimum is a little bit higher. It's probably too high, but I don't know. I feel like she'd just annoy me.
Yeah, that's true. But you only have to have sex with her once in this game.
Yeah, it's just I don't know.
But yeah, I know this is a valid choice. You really can't go wrong either way you pick.
Exactly. There's really no wrong answer to this.
Yeah, unless you decide to marry Jessica Simpson, which, you know, that's you could actually be faulted for picking that.
That would actually be the wrong answer.
Yes, that would be correct.
Jessica Biel, I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like she'd be fun to hang out with. Maybe she wouldn't make the best wife, and that's probably a bad decision. But I feel like she'd be a lot of fun to just kick it with. And I feel like she could relate to a lot of things and wouldn't really be as high maintenance and as demanding as others might be. Alba, obviously, I think is gorgeous. I think she's, you know, one of the hottest, if not the hottest out there. But at the same time, I haven't really seen her wifely, motherly photos, so maybe that chord hasn't struck with me yet. But I just don't get the same vibe from her in terms of a wife.
All right, so interesting.
That's my take. It's good that we disagree there. I like the sharing of ideas and thoughts.
All right, well, let's see how we do on my proposed Mary Bob Kill of the week. I am proposing three superhero girlfriends: Lois Lane, Superman's girlfriend; Mary Jane Watson, who is Spider-Man's girlfriend; and Pepper Potts, who is Iron Man's girlfriend. So, Paul, have at it.
Okay. So first of all, I'm not much of a comic book person, and so that leaves me at a bit of a disadvantage in the sense that I'm just basically relying on the actresses' portrayals and research.
If you've seen the movies, though, you should be able to answer this question, because the actresses who play them are quite prominent for the most part.
That's true. Actually, I haven't seen Superman.
That's probably for the better, because Kate Bosworth, let me just say, was a terrible Lois Lane.
Well, that's not helping my answer here, because what I was going to say is that Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts is great. I think she'd be a great wife. I think she'd be fantastic. So that's a pretty safe choice for me.
So you would marry her?
I just really don't like Kirsten. I would marry her. Kirsten Dunst just pisses me off. I really don't like her, and I really didn't like the character in Spider-Man. So I was going to kill her anyway, and I don't even really care how Kate Bosworth was as Lois Lane, but she she gets fucked, I guess.
Yeah, well, I can't blame you there. Kate Bosworth is... she's very hot, Kate Bosworth. But
she
yeah.
is very hot, too. I think she... I mean, I don't know if we're going with the actual comic book girlfriend or their, like, real-life portrayals, but if we're going off pure looks,
yeah. Kate Bosworth... Lois Lane, though, also, I don't know if you've watched Smallville ever, but the girl who plays Lois Lane on Smallville, Erica Durant, also getting it done in a big way. So, you know, Lois Lane is no slouch.
So maybe I should consider her for wife, or is she not that type of material?
Well, no, if you want to marry Pepper Potts, go ahead, Paul. I'm not gonna begrudge you on that fact. But, you know, yeah, you well, may...
Let's see what you have.
Well, okay, I would...
Let's see what you have.
I would marry Lois Lane, I would fuck Mary Jane Watson, and I would throw away Pepper Potts. And let me tell you why.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I base my decision not on Kirsten Dunst, because Kirsten Dunst would obviously be a throwaway if you were considering her as Mary Jane Watson. Just awful, Kirsten Dunst in that role. But the comic book Mary Jane Watson is a hot model slash actress who isn't nearly as annoying. She's sassy, she's witty, and so she would make a great fuck, I think. Lois Lane would make a great Mary because she's smart, she doesn't take any bullshit from anyone, she's also very hot, but I feel like I could deal with Lois Lane for an entire lifetime. Pepper Potts, not as much on the character front as the other two, so, you know, she gets the unfortunate axe here, although I did love Gwyneth Paltrow's portrayal of her in the movies.
Okay, well that's a good answer, and I think you know a little bit more than me about each of those three. So that's probably the more intelligent answer, actually.
basically,
the moral of the story is that Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson is just really super annoying. It just makes you just not want to watch the movie anymore.
I agree. Well, hopefully, they're rebooting Spider-Man, and hopefully they'll pick someone much better than Kirsten Dunst. Because really, Kirsten Dunst played her as this emotional... weak, damsel in distress. Yeah, and that's not what Mary Jane Watson is. Mary Jane Watson is sassy. She's witty. She'll, you know, snap at you. You know, she's not this helpless damsel that needs to be saved by Spider-Man all the time, even though she is often. But, you know, but that's not her character.
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to change the actress, a good parallel for that would be what they did with Batman. Maybe not a good... Well, okay, Katie Holmes is really hot.
Yeah.
She's not a good actress. Maggie Gyllenhaal is kind of in both of
those. Yeah. Not as attractive as Katie Holmes. Well, yeah.
Not as attractive, a better actress. Maybe not a good enough actress to make up for the lack of attractiveness, but somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, I would have preferred if they kept Katie Holmes just for continuity's sake and you don't have to adjust to a new face.
Yeah, definitely.
Plus, she's much better looking. But you can't. Yeah, but you know, Katie Holmes went crazy with Tom Cruise in between the movies, so you couldn't really count on.
Are you gonna go see Night and Day, Steve?
I will be skipping Night and Day.
That doesn't look good enough for you.
No.
Cruise and Cam.
Are you gonna see Night and Day? I mean, you don't see movies to begin with. So why would you see Night and Day?
I haven't seen Toy Story or Iron Man 2. I think Night and Day is pretty low in the queue. Although I've seen weird movies sometimes. Like, I just end up seeing movies that I shouldn't see.
Huh.
So, who knows? But hopefully I don't see that one, because that one looks... When you listen to the language, it just sounds
awful. Truly awful.
I'm also of the belief that Tom Cruise has to do his one move where he, like, has to arch his back and, like, duck under something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every Mission Impossible movie, he does that thing where he, like, arches his back and then, like, you know, leans all the way to duck under a helicopter or a train.
Yeah,
And I think that also happens in this movie, so I was kind of sick of that. Okay, then. I guess we are about finished here. We're going a little over an hour, and hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. This is our first remote one. I think it worked out pretty well. I didn't get a chance to see Steve nod at me or anything like that.
Yeah, completely audio cues this week from one another. We don't even look at each other, so hopefully it'll be better from a listening standpoint.
And we had some smooth segues and some less smooth segues, but we'll try to touch it up for you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.
It was so bizarrely dreadful. Yeah.